Welcome to Sound Practice, the business podcast for physicians and healthcare leaders, hosted by Mike Tsakopoulos and produced by the American Association for Physician Leadership.
We would like to thank Jackson Physician Search, AAPL's Executive Alliance Partner, for their generous support of today's podcast. Jackson Physician Search is an established industry leader in physician recruitment and pioneered recruitment methodologies standard in the industry today. The firm specializes in permanent recruitment of physician executives, physicians, and advanced practice providers for hospitals, health systems, academic medical centers, and medical groups across the United States. For more information, visit www.jacksonphysicianssearch.com. Courage, optimism, patience, and empathy. These are characteristics of successful leaders. For many years, my guest has thought deeply about leadership. She has helped dozens of colleagues improve their skills. Prepare to benefit from a national leadership expert. Next on Sound Practice. My guest today is Bahar Sederati. Dr. Sederati is a nationally known physician leader. She is the creator of Thrive Masterclass and has assisted many physicians in the development of their leadership skills. It is my pleasure to welcome Bahar Sederati to Sound Practice.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my absolute pleasure. Thank you for joining me. My brief introduction did not do you justice, Doctor. Could you please describe your path as a physician leader?
Sure. I think Bahar is enough. Let's just go with first name. I feel more comfortable at home. Thank you for having me. As a physician leader, well, I'm a board certified internist, and I'm originally from Iran, born and raised in Iran, did my medical school in Iran, and about 25 years ago, I left and I came and started my journey outside Iran. That started by a career as a teacher and a professor in a university, not intended, but that really helped me to really discover or uncover my passion of teaching and coaching and helping. And then I started my residency in a Yale affiliated hospital in Connecticut. And after that, after 3 years of residency, came to California, worked in private practice about 10 years, and then transitioned from a private practice to an executive role and developed more skill set in the leadership and developing emotional intelligence as a significant human skill that is very aligned in the leadership field.
Let's look a little bit more at that, because I'm interested in the COPE methodology. Is it really possible to teach courage or empathy?
I think we all have courage and empathy. We're going to teach people how to deploy it and how to master it and perhaps explore areas that is barrier and fully expressing it. These are human characters. These are human skills. So I sincerely believe most, if not all, people have different degrees of it. And one of the greatest maybe evolution in my life has been that I came out of this dichotomy and black and white mindset, and I see everything as a dial. So it's like an equalizer, and you are creating different sound system, and in different stages of your life, you have different levels of each of these components. The goal is that at each given time, be able to elevate them and deploy them, and then reflect and go back and see what was the barrier to deploying them, to understand myself better and give me an opportunity to enhance that personal character.
Are there some personality types that find that easier to do than others?
Well, there is a pop psychology personality type, and there is personality type that is being defined by DSM-5. I'm not a psychiatrist or a psychologist, so I really don't have that much depth necessary to judge. But the way I look at it, I look at it from a lens of life. Mm-hmm. And I believe these are human skills, and human skills, I genuinely believe they are our emotional intelligence. And if someone has higher degree of each of these elements, or perhaps elements that I'm not including in my model, that goes back to their life experiences, their childhood, their upbringing, the parenting model, what they have seen from either nature or nurture, and then the life experiences in their adolescence and adulthood and what they have cultivated. Human experiences, they are foundation of our wisdom, and they're based on the experiences that we've had. We have two types of intelligence. We have a fluid intelligence. We learn, we study, we are acquiring it. And then based on those, we will be facing experiences in our life. And then we will have applied intelligence, which is a crystallized intelligence. So that's how I believe the knowledge will transfer and flow through. You have something, you go through the life, and then you gain some wisdom, and then you reflect and you adjust. This is without any training. Now, to answer your question, depending what your life story is and what your DNA is, you may have different levels of it. But we are in the 21st century, and we need to really activate those more than ever, because we're facing an industry, we're facing a war, we're facing an area of our life, from work, life, media, social media, technology, that they are mastering these skills and how they are taking control of us. And yet we are not there yet.
Interesting. Maybe you could talk a little bit more about the influence of social media as it comes to these topics. And I just want to understand, and this is maybe preliminary, most of your work is with your colleagues that are physicians. Is that correct?
I would say 50-50, either okay. Physicians or executives.
Okay. Great. Now, as to, in my word may be stronger than what your sentiment is, Bahar, so you correct me, but it sounds like you're saying that there's some degree of maybe manipulation through social media of people. Is that, am I misunderstanding what you're saying? Maybe you could clarify.
I think we're all being influenced by media and social media. It's the nature of a human being. If you have a limbic system, if you have a limbic primal brain, you are under the influence of your surrounding. That's the nature of the human. We have it, and there is a reason why we have it. So I have a different view. Instead of rejecting it, I embrace that we have an emotional brain, which is our limbic brain, and this is designed to help us to act. Sometimes we really need to act really fast. You see a snake, you don't have time to think about what the snake is to escape. So that's why you have that brain. Evolutionary, that was required a lot more, because back then you had to probably even escape from the lions. But right now you do have that, and there is a benefit. There is a evolutionary benefit to it. But now we have a different level of threat, a different level of stimulation and influence, which is technology and social media. So if you are human, you have an emotional brain, you are under the influence.
I read that you earned a Managing Happiness certificate from Harvard University. I have to say, I'm intrigued. Can you tell me about the certification and what you learned?
Sure. So to give you a little bit of backstory, I was sick with COVID and I had nothing else to do. And I came across a podcast that was a conversation between Simon Sinek and Arthur Brooks. And Arthur Brooks is an instructor who teaches that course at Harvard Business School and Harvard Kennedy School. And he has done a lot of research regarding happiness. And he actually recently had a book with Oprah, which is skipping my mind, but I'm sure we can link to your audience in podcast notes. So that's how I was introduced to that concept. And then I looked and I found this course through Harvard Business Review, which is the science of happiness. And what I've learned, is if we change our mindset, and that was perhaps one of the revolutionary lessons that I learned. If we change our mindset from focusing on what we want to have to what we already have, so to replace greed with gratitude, that's foundational in developing a happier life. And I think this may speak to physicians, because as physicians, we are programmed and we have this deep desire and drive and motivation to learn and enhance and just be better and go for it. And it's a great attribute to have, but we also have to pause from time to time and reflect and see, what are we after? Is more bringing us happiness? Like, is it more happier necessarily or not? And as Arthur Brooks explains, as we go to a certain stage of our life, we have gained so much experience and wisdom based on all the knowledge that we have acquired. So let's see, I go to high school, I go to college in America. I did my medical school in Iran, so it was 7 years. But let's go through the college and medical school and residency. You acquire knowledge, you're acquiring knowledge. But then you enter life, and then based on knowledge, you have experiences, and you coin and you build your wisdom. So you transition from your getting, grabbing, learning, kind of also sharing the wisdom, sharing that crystallized intelligence. And that's another viewpoint that will help us to live a happier life. And that's perhaps the reason, and I'm going to invite all of your listeners to reflect, are we happier when we go after something, or are we happier when we give to something? Is service and contribution more meaningful to us, or just accumulating success and building a strong resume of achieving one role after each other? Which one is a bigger driver or a more sustainable drive for us?
Do you think that the very characteristics that make people successful early in their life fight against them being happy later in their life?
What is success? I think we have to first define what success means. Is success achievement, or success is happy? To me, success is a happy, fulfilled life. It's not a one-dimensional concept. Achievement is a part of that concept, but it's not all of it. So if you look at positive psychology, Martin Seligman has coined the term of PERMA, which is a foundation of happiness. And I did build my own form or framework for happiness. It is based on PERMA, so it's not original, but that's how I understand it. And what I term that form, F-O-R-M-M. So in order to be happy, you need five different things. F stands for flow. So you are in a state that whatever you are involved in, whatever is your career, you are having that flow state. The challenge and the joy that you are getting from it, it's creating an equilibrium. So you are not bored and you are not super anxious. So that's the flow. And then optimism is a great attribute to happiness, which brings you gratitude, which brings you contentment. And then is relationship. R stands for relationship. And cultivating a strong relationship is a significant part of happiness. The longest happiness study by Harvard was done, which was over 80 years. And that showed that the most strong index of happiness is having relationship. And then it's first M stands for meaning. What kind of a meaning or purpose I'm following in my life? Am I after just building a resume, or no, I want to contribute to this world? Do I have a cause? Do I have a value? Do I have a purpose bigger than me? And the last is mastery. And mastery is your achievements. So there are different components, and each of them, they have their own value.
Very interesting. You do coaching. Can you tell me how, if someone that's listening to us today is interested in interacting with you, what that looks like and how they can get a hold of you?
I think the best way of getting hold of me is through LinkedIn.
I was pleased to see that you completed work to become a certified physician executive from the American Association for Physician Leadership, the host of this podcast. Can you tell me about your experience with the AAPL?
It was a very pleasant experience. I consider myself a part of the family. In fact, I'm a Vanguard member, and it was an interesting journey. And it opened my eyes to so many different skill sets that as a leader, and in my case, as a physician executive, you need to learn that perhaps you haven't learned in your traditional medical training. And to be successful, to drive change, and also to face these uncertainties and change and learn the nuances of a healthcare system, something that we are not learning the system. We are fantastic and master the art of seeing patients and making the diagnosis, but this is not something that we are actively trained. And this is a component that I highly recommend for any physician, even if they are not intending to be in a fully executive level, but understand the nuances of healthcare. So you may not consider becoming a CPE like me, but this AAPL offers a lot of different courses that you can just take on the areas that you feel interests you and will add value to work as an employed physician or as a practice owner.
Well, that sounds like very good advice to me. Bahar, as our time together comes to an end, I'd like to ask you what may seem to be an odd question. You are a gifted artist, and I was very impressed with your work. Can you tell me about art's impact upon your practice of medicine?
On practice of medicine and art. Well, I see everything in colors. I think everything in my life is color-coded. My calendar is color-coded. My Gmail is color-coded. My entire stack of Google Drive is color-coded. So everything has a color. So that's how I organize my mind, where each item belongs. And understanding the concepts of medicine early on, I always drew everything. Like I would create avatars and I would put different signs on that avatar, and that avatar become a disease. And that's how I actually taught very complex diseases. I use a lot of charts and diagram and flow charts. And that's how, in fact, I got my green card. I got my green card as a medical illustrator and contributing author to USMLE board review books, first aid series. It was an honor to work with the team, and that's how I got my green card.
Well, it's fascinating. You're clearly a very gifted artist, and I'd encourage your audience to take a look at some of your work, because it's, at least to me, I found it wildly impressive.
Thank you.
As someone who can't draw a stick figure, I am incredibly jealous. Tell us one more time how people can get a hold of you if they would like to work with you.
Sure. You can reach me on LinkedIn, Bahar Sadoradi, MD. And my profile is open. If you like to follow me, we're more than welcome. You can DM me on LinkedIn. And I'm pretty accessible.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much. My guest has been Dr. Bahar Sadoradi. Thank you for being on Sound Practice.
Thank you for having me.
My thanks to Bahar Sadoradi for her time and insights. Dr. Sadoradi is a true physician leader. My thanks also to the American Association for Physician Leadership for making this podcast possible. Please join me next time on Sound Practice. We release a new episode every other Wednesday.
You've been listening to Sound Practice, the business podcast for physicians and healthcare leaders. Check out the show notes for this episode at soundpracticepodcast.com. If you have any suggestions for future episodes, we'd love to hear them. Email us at info@soundpracticepodcast.com. Subscribe to Sound Practice wherever you listen to podcasts so you can automatically receive our episodes. And please rate us and comment on the podcast in iTunes and Google Play. Sound Practice is presented and produced by the team at American Association for Physician Leadership. We are the world's premier organization for all aspects of physician leadership in every sector of healthcare. Learn more at physicianleaders.org. Holy cow, Batman and Robin, Red Bull Kapow.